It's the Bengal Financial Literacy Show coming up next on KISU FM Radio with our host, Chris Chatwin, professor with the Idaho State University College of Business.
Thank you for joining us for this month's episode of the Bengal Financial Literacy Show. I am your host, Chris Chatwin, coming to you from KISU Studios at ISU. Have with me today our guest, Joel Phillips. Joel, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Joel is a return guest. Had Joel on a couple years ago when GameStop was going nuts and felt like we needed to talk to the folks about, you know, the wild stock market. And so once again, we bring back Joel to talk about the wild stock market.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Joel, maybe just remind the guests who you are, what you do.
Sure. A financial advisor for a company called Merit Financial Advisors here in Pocatello. They're a national shop. I think they got about 40 locations across the U.S. based out of Atlanta, and we are the Pocatello office. I've been doing this about 17, 18 years, and excited to be here.
Yeah, Joel, also alum of ISU.
I am. I have two degrees here.
2 degrees. You get a degree in econ, right?
Undergrad in econ, and then did an MBA here as well.
Awesome.
And currently have an opportunity to serve on the ISU Foundation as well. So.
Oh, excellent.
And ties to ISU are strong.
Yeah, we like that. We like the ties to ISU. Well, Joel, this has been, we could say, an interesting first quarter of the year in the stock market, but really, I think what inspired the genesis of, hey, we need to talk about this was really the first week, first 10 days of April.
Yeah, sure.
So what the heck's going on in the stock market, and should people be freaked out?
Well, that's a good question. Let me answer the second question first. No, I'd say it's business as usual, but this is, sure, a different cause, but we don't like the saying this time is different. There's always a different cause, but it's always kind of always results the same. In this particular case, there are some things in motion. We can talk more about that in just a minute, but the punchline to your question is stocks, which are just companies, the value of companies that are publicly traded, they're just repricing. People are looking at the future, let's say the next 6 months or 9 months or 12 months or 18 months, and they're recognizing that because of the current policy actions that those companies will not be worth as much. Notice I didn't say worthless. They just won't be worth as much as what they were, let's say, a month ago. And so they're adjusting their prices accordingly. When I invest, if I put some amount of money to work today in an investment, pick whatever company you want, I don't get the return of the last 12 months, so I don't get the last 12 months of economic conditions. If I put money to work today, I get what's coming over the next 6 to 12 months or 18 months or 24 months or however long I'm invested in that company. And so when we look at these external policy actions and the impact that they'll have on these companies' finances, then they're also recognizing, well, you're right, maybe I'm just not as confident in the future, and so therefore I'm not willing to pay as much today as I was 6 months ago, 12 months ago. So anyways, you cascade that across all the publicly traded companies in markets, and hence why prices are coming down, and in some cases, quite a lot in any single day.
Yeah, and quite a lot of volatility. I mean, I just ran some quick numbers, jotted some things down. If we look at that first week of April, I think April 3rd, down about 5%. And this is looking at the S&P 500, so kind of a broad measure. But April 4th, down 6%. So, you know, 2 days of pretty bad.
Right.
But then April 9th or April 10th, April 9th, up 10.
Sure.
9.5 on the S&P, and that was the day that I guess tariffs were paused.
Sure.
So you mentioned a lot of this because it's forward looking, right? Is, hey, things are going to be bad because these tariffs have been enacted. And then, oh, maybe things won't be so bad because the tariffs have been paused.
Sure.
So it's an on again, off again kind of a thing. I mean, for me, I know enough to not look at it every day, right. But for most folks, I mean, you think about a retiree who's looking at, here's where my 401k is at, or here's where my accounts are at. I mean, that can be a scary thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So should people be doing things differently, maybe based on where their age is or where they are in their retirement stage?
Well, if the current volatility has you concerned about things, you should be taking a look at your portfolio and how you're structured. If it is too much for you, I don't know. Perhaps you never should have been invested that aggressively to start with. The question is, do you make a decision right in the eye of the storm? We're always reluctant to do so, but at the end of the day, you've got to be able to sleep at night. And so if it's causing you too much concern, well, sure, take a good hard look, perhaps get an outside opinion as to whether you should restructure. But With that being said, if you are set up correctly, if your portfolio is structured accordingly, this is probably just another storm that needs to be weathered. We typically tend to break portfolios into a short-term bucket and a long-term bucket. And if you're set up accordingly, your short-term pool of money should be providing enough buffer to get you through to the far side of whatever this is. I want to speak particularly to the tariffs for just a minute. It's not as if we're not concerned about the tariffs.
Sure.
However, we are taking them with a grain of salt because they are strictly external to the market. In other words, it's not as if all these companies are in terrible financial shape. In fact, just the opposite. Companies mm-hmm. are in outstanding financial shape, by and large.
Yeah.
The economy is strong right now. Companies are generally speaking, in pretty strong financial shape. But there's these external policy actions. We call them politics. But there are these external policy actions that are having a direct impact on their finances. Let's quickly dissect what a tariff is and what it isn't. A tariff is, it's not a tax, to be clear, but think of it like a tax. It's just it's an incremental government cost levied on the cost of doing business. Currently, what's being proposed is to levy this additional cost on goods. By and large, services are exempted, but on goods. So if I run any type of company where I import a lot of my goods, a lot of my inventory, if I'm importing that from somewhere outside of the United States, well, then I've got to pay an additional fee. Well, if I'm the operator of the business, then it's just my cost of doing business is going to go up. If my cost of business goes up and I make no changes in revenue, well, guess what? My profits aren't quite as much. Mm-hmm. And if my profits aren't quite as much, well, then my company's not worth as much as what it once was. So hence why we see a decline in stock market prices. Now, the reality is any business owner operator will only tolerate that for so long before they say, well, this just isn't worth it anymore. I'm not going to take this kind of risk without this kind of return. And so inevitably, a tariff leads to prices being increased across the board. We'll come back to that more in just a minute. But again, all of this is evidenced by the couple days of extreme volatility there. It's all external. In other words, if our policymakers were to come out and say, well, never mind, we've figured out an alternative here, we're not going to do this anymore, I think you would see just the opposite. Because again, the decline in the stock market is not, or I'm gonna not use the word stock market. I'm intentionally going to use a decline in company valuations, which is all stock market is.
Right.
It's the collective valuation of a whole bunch of individual companies. The current decline in the valuation of those companies is not a reflection on the last 12 months, but rather a projection of the next 6 to 12 months. And if the cost of doing business for most large companies and small companies is projected to go up over the next 6 months, which means profits are going to come down, well, guess what? So do share prices. So anyways, I got off there a little bit about answering your question about do we make moves right now. I would probably have a different opinion if we were on shakier financial ground, which just to be clear, 6 or 12 months from now, we might be.
Yeah.
But we're in a very different spot than we were in, let's say, 08. We're, by and large, this is a broad generalization, but by and large, the economy is solid right now. I won't say it's gangbusters like it was maybe 18 months ago coming out of COVID and the extra cash that was moving its way through the system. But the economy, just the exchange of goods and services between individual buyers and sellers, the economy is solid right now.
And I think that's something that a lot of people have a misconception about. They look at the stock market, and if it's going down, they think that's the economy. While they might have some correlation, the stock market is not the economy.
No, not even kind of. They do tend to mirror each other. Sometimes one is in front of the other. But think about it. We'll come back to the stock market in a minute. But an economy is just simply an aggregation or it's the sum total of a whole bunch of individuals buying and selling services. Mm-hmm. I had breakfast this morning that had to come from somewhere. I had to buy that good from somebody, right?
Yeah.
Today I'm going to head into the office. I'm going to sell my services to somebody else. Tonight we're going to go do a thing. Or I don't know what we're going to do, but I'm going to go spend some money somewhere.
Right.
That's all the economy is it's the buying and selling, the exchanging of goods and services. Go back way back in time and people used to barter for their existence. Those days are gone. And so now most of us go and we earn a living and we take that cash and we trade that cash for something that would prefer over the top of that. So when I say the economy is strong, what I'm referring to there is just the exchange, the normal exchange of goods and services that all of us as individuals on a daily basis are doing. If you look at those data points, yes, they are lagged. But if we look at those data points right now, generally speaking, economy's in a pretty solid spot. Sure, there's a couple areas that are concerning. Inflation's a concern. wage growth is a concern. There's a couple things that are somewhat concerning, but there are also just as many, if not more, that are solid.
Yeah.
The employment market is really solid right now. Folks are well employed. Unemployment is historically low. There's just there's plenty of evidence that suggests that the economy, the exchange of goods and services, is solid. So that takes us to the stock market. The stock market is just the aggregation of a whole bunch of individual for-profit companies that exist in that economy. Whether I'm selling groceries, whether I'm selling mortgages to finance a house, whether I'm constructing the house, the cars, the gasoline, just all of the different things that we all do on a daily basis, all of those for-profit companies are existing to meet a need there. And that's what the stock market is. It's a large aggregation of the biggest of the big of these companies.
The biggest of the big that are publicly traded, correct, available to anyone. I mean, correct, they don't take into account, you know, all small businesses, you know, many. There's some very large private businesses.
Absolutely.
I think here in Southeast Idaho, everybody's familiar with Winco. That's not a publicly traded company, but obviously they're affected by the economy.
Yes.
Your mom and pops, lots of other things, but. So by and large, the economy, not amazing, solid. Things could be better for sure. Who knows where we'll move because it's a lag. So
sure, right,
numbers
right
could come out and 6 months later we could say, okay, I guess we're getting to shaky ground here.
Sure.
But not the same thing. And I think that's an important thing because we watch the news, especially the financial news, and I heard you give a fantastic talk at one point where you spoke about fear, right? The headlines are meant to grab our attention, and fear is what grabs those. So the financial news is all these stories about how terrible things are, and that drags us in, and we're watching. It's like the really bad car wreck. Nobody wants to hear the story about the lady that went to work every day for 40 years and tucked money away into her 401k, and now she's retired and happy and going on a cruise. And, you know, that's just – there's no excitement to that story. We watch the news and we think the whole world is falling apart. And maybe it might. Hopefully it doesn't.
Right.
But it's really easy to get caught up in that. And one of the things I've been having to talk to my students about, you know, because I'm teaching these freshmen or, you know, sophomores, they have no clue. They don't remember what 2008 was like.
Mm-hmm.
You and I, we remember that.
Sure.
Many of our listeners remember that and how right bad things were. You know, we were getting unemployment that was skyrocketing. The market, of course, you know, the market went down 50%. The stock market went down 50%. That was a terrible time.
Yeah.
This might be a terrible time. We don't know. But
could be. It could end up there.
It could end up there. But bottom line is we'll probably come out of it okay.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to be Chicken Little and say the sky's falling and it's all over. But
right,
it could be bad. Could be worse. But more than likely, we'll look back on this in a few years and we'll remember it. But things will be okay.
Yeah.
As with 2008, as with 2000, the dot-com crisis and everything else with that. So,
yeah, there's always a different cause this go around. It's tariffs and all the talk of tariffs, and who knows, it could be over by the end of this week, or we might still be having this conversation a year from now. None of us know.
Well, and how much of this too, because you talk about the stock market, right, is an aggregate of the value of all of these publicly traded companies. A big part of this, you know, we look at so far 2025, we're down, you know, roughly 10%, depending on when we're listening to this and what the market does today. Well, we just went through 2 years of plus 20% growth.
Sure.
in the valuation of these markets. Part of this could very well just be, you know what, the companies were overvalued.
Right.
You know, yeah, we're not going to be able to perfectly value those every time. And so some of this could be more a correction of bringing prices back down to maybe a more sustainable over the next 12 months value. You know, that could be external. Everything you said could be, we were just simply overvalued and now it's coming back to it. And maybe the external forces influence us, or
sure,
it could be the new norm.
Yeah. You talked about astute behavior here. How do we be smart here? I think we collectively as individuals, we need to be careful about the information we feed on, and then more importantly, the action we take based on that. There's a ton of great data out there. I love to look at data on a daily basis, but you got to keep in mind the business model of a lot of your large media companies, and that's not to discredit them. We're investors in all of them, right?
Sure,
but you
got
to understand their business model. Their business model is to take information and to present it to to their customers. And then, of course, the number of customers they get, which now, unlike journalism of, let's say, 20 years ago, today we can actually measure the direct impact. How many clicks did I get on this article?
Yes.
Now? I posted it this morning, and by noon I had 10,000 clicks, whereas go back 20, 30, 40 years ago before we had that ability. If I was a journalist, I would have to do my best to write a great article, and I would have no idea its impact until long after the fact, right? Mm-hmm. And so what's happened is the way that we as consumers consume our information from the media has changed radically in the last 10, 15 years. And of course, the media needs to respond to that, and so they're very interested in punchy sound bites. That part hasn't changed, but that's why we've seen this great polarization, and not just politically. But either you think that the future is very bright and you click on those articles, or you think we're going backwards and this is the end and you click on those articles. But because we have the ability now to actually measure in real time and understand what we have real time data that tells us what type of articles, what are people watching? What are people tuning into? Even mm-hmm. if it's as simple as what I'm scrolling through in my social media, whether I click on it or whether I just linger on whatever that thing is and I read it a little bit longer, or if I take a screenshot to send it to somebody, those platforms can sense all of that. And so think about it. If I'm running a media operation and I need to sell advertisements to keep to run the business model, what types of content are you going to put out there? You're going to put the type of content out there that's going to generate clicks in either direction. Yeah. It doesn't matter what your political flavor is. I just need to generate clicks and engagement is what I'm trying to do. And so all of that to say, they take data that all of us can get. Most of the data is publicly available through government sources. But they take it and they do an outstanding job. Again, I got to caveat all this by saying we're investors in all these companies,
yeah.
right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They do a great job of taking data and turning it into entertainment. We call it infotainment, right? Mm-hmm. So all of that to say, if you're consuming whatever your flavor is, whether it comes from the left, comes from the right, it doesn't matter. Just be very careful about your view of the world and how you make decisions based on that. We certainly don't want to, we discourage long-term decision-making based on short-term data points.
Like knee-jerk reactions,
yeah, that's
basically.
Absolutely right.
So then let's circle back, because I think that ties into this. You mentioned, you know, if this pain point is too much, then perhaps you shouldn't have been invested this way anyways.
Sure.
Going back to what we experienced during the first 10 days of April, I think we'd all love to have a 10% gain in our return right. or in our portfolio on any given day, which is what we had April 9th. But most of us don't want the -6 and the -5. And the point here is, if you can't stomach those losses, then you can't or shouldn't be invested in a way that could provide the 10% gain.
Right.
Risk and return are related. You can't get bigger returns without taking on risk.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. Yeah. Risk. Yeah. You just nailed it. Risk and return are always related. We all want all of the return and we want none of the risk. It
sure.
just doesn't exist.
Does not. And if somebody tells you that it does, or I've got the foolproof investment for you or guaranteed, that's your ears need to perk up and you need to approach that with a huge grain of salt, I think. Right?
Think about what an investor does. An investor takes their capital, their life savings, everything that they've worked for, whatever mm-hmm. it is, and they're providing it to another operation for them to go and expand their operation. Well, so flip that around. Whoever's using the company that's using the capital, they're basically renting the money, right? They're renting the capital. I need to use this capital for time being to expand my operation or whatever it is that I'm going to, whatever my plans are with it. And so they've got to pay a rental fee, and mm-hmm. we call that the cost of capital. That's the fancy word for it. But the reality is, what kind of percentage do I have to pay on this? And so flip that around from the investor's perspective. If I want the highest return I can get, well, guess what? You're going to have to put it in riskier investments. It's just, I won't even say stock, forget it. I'm just going to say
anything,
a riskier investment.
Anything risky.
And I'm going to slightly redefine the term risk to uncertainty or probability of loss of capital, right? The more uncertain a thing is, or the more likely is that I may not get all of my capital back, those things raise risk. And so therefore, if I as an investor am willing to put my hard-earned money to work in an operation like that, I want a higher return.
Yeah, you need to be compensated.
That's exactly right.
Potential compensation.
Absolutely. And so let's go to the other end of the spectrum. If I say, I just can't do that anymore. The volatility is mm-hmm. driving me nuts. That really bothers me. Okay, no big deal. Let's look at an alternative. We can go loan money to the United States government, backed by the full faith and credit of the United States, right?
Mm-hmm.
The largest economy in the world. It's unique because we as citizens have ceded the right for our government to tax us. I mean, what a great income stream for governments. They, mm-hmm. they get a tax off the largest economy in the world. And so that's a pretty strong credit risk. That's a pretty strong, it's certainly a better risk proposition than a small mom and pop operation.
Yeah, even if you don't have faith in your government, again, it doesn't matter what political spectrum you're on, you could say, I don't have faith in this this administration or that administration, but bottom line is the U.S. government has never defaulted on their loans, strongest economy in the world. It's a relatively safe place to put your money.
So yes, if I decide, I can't take the uncertainty, the volatility of investing in stock, well then, sure, I'll take my money and I'll loan it to the United States government. They'll pay me back with interest. It's as boring as the day is long.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? In exchange for that perceived safety comes a reduction in return, and you're just going to have to be comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And if all else fails, if you say, I don't like either of those options, well, great. Hold it in cash. Put it under your mattress for all I care.
Yeah.
But how much
your return?
Yeah, exactly. What's your return going to be under the mattress?
Yeah.
With inflation, it's going to be negative right now.
So. Yeah, exactly.
So back to the whole notion of risk and return are always related. And these are not mutually exclusive. Very rarely should somebody be all in on any of those. It's usually a combination of all the above.
Yeah. Yeah. And not different stages in life for sure too, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, I've seen far too many people who are approaching retirement and feel like there's not enough and they take some big gambles and it does not pay off very
well.
Right. And others that maybe it does, but bottom line is, based on where you're at in your stage of life, the amount of risk you should be taking is going to be different.
Yeah, absolutely.
I teach my students the best way to avoid any of that, of taking unnecessary risks as you get close to retirement, is by starting early.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, the earlier you start, the less risk you have to take. And, you know, it's not about getting huge returns. It's about being able to meet your goals,
absolutely.
Your long-term goals. So having a plan in place, I think, is crucial. So Joel, what advice would you give? Maybe we can break it into a couple of different age groups. Like, what advice would you give to, let's say, you know, college student getting ready to graduate, going out into the workforce, as far as preparing for retirement, and then maybe mid-range, you mm-hmm. know, working career, and then right at retirement?
Yeah, I'm obviously very biased because that's where we're in the business of, but we would encourage everybody to put a plan together. That's probably the most important thing. But
plan more than anything. Yeah.
Yeah. The plan above all else is what is the plan? But let's go back to your specific age ranges. If I'm young and just getting started in life, probably the single best investment I can make is right back in myself, in education, in training, whatever it may be. This world will pay you largely what they perceive your value. And the higher your lifetime earnings, the easier it is to save and accumulate for retirement. So at a young age, if I'm just getting started in life, perhaps the best thing you can do is make an investment back in yourself, a smart investment. Don't take on a bunch of college debt to get a degree that's not going to pay off. But there are plenty of opportunities out there right now. And then from there, it's personal finance 101. I need to live on less than I make, or I need to make more than I earn, whichever of those two perspectives you prefer. I need to pay off any of my debts and accumulate towards the future. There's certainly plenty of resources out there to help our folks get going in life. Once we get to midlife, then you're balancing any of the debts you incurred early in life, let's say student loans, whatever it may be. You bought your first home, you bought a car, and so you're balancing paying off previous debts and then saving for the future. As it relates to retirement savings, it's one of those things where time is either your best friend or your worst enemy.
Mm-hmm.
If I start early enough, it's actually mathematically fairly straightforward. I won't say easy, but I will say straightforward.
Yeah.
The math is fairly doable regardless of your income level. However, as Americans, we love today and we'll think about tomorrow later.
Yes, that's a tomorrow problem.
And so it's okay, you know, I get my first real job and I say, well, I'll start saving next year, next, you know, when I get my raise, whatever it may be. We love to delay. And so that typically catches up with us middle age and we find we've got a little bit of ground to make up. And then by the time we get late career, now it's we've lost a lot of runway. And so now we really need to make it up. The trade-off there is we're usually at peak earnings.
Mm-hmm.
Peak earnings and probably the fewest, on a relative basis, the fewest expenses we have. Depending on our life situation, a lot of life's expenses, whether it's a home, car, a lot of those things,
we've got kids.
We've got those things handled. And so late in my career, I'm typically peak earnings, and especially earnings relative to my expenses have probably never been more lopsided in my favor. And so that's that final push to pedal to the metal and make sure I'm in a good shape for when that day comes when we are done working, whether that's by choice or by force.
Joel, thank you so much for the advice. You know, we might be in crazy times, but I guarantee it won't be the last time.
No.
So I think bottom line, I like what you said about information, the information we take in. It's going to influence the choices we made. But most important thing, I think I heard you say that so many of us lack is we have to have a plan.
Yes.
And I think when we have a plan, it helps us avoid the knee-jerk reactions. It helps us save. It just puts us on the right track. So having a plan of some kind of our spending, our investing, our life, et cetera. So, Joel, always a pleasure.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
Maybe sometime we'll have you on where things aren't just insane, ridiculous, sure. And we have to talk about it.
Right.
And we'll talk about the good times, but I appreciate having you on the show, and thanks for listening.
Thanks for having me.
The Bengal Financial Literacy Show, hosted by ISU's Chris Chatwin, can be heard every third Monday at 7:30 p.m. on KISU-FM. Shows are produced at KISU Studios in Pocatello. Audio of this and all past episodes of Bengal Financial Literacy Show can be found at KISU.org or from Spotify and other select podcast services. Music was produced by Joseph Emmanuel under the direction of the ISU Commercial Music Program. Major funding support for KISU local programming comes from the Associated Students of Idaho State University.